This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. So how come you're not going to bother to vote tomorrow? Sorry, that may be an unfair assumption about you in particular, but since it looks like as many as 8 out of 10 people who could vote in Tuesday's election will not turn out, chances are pretty good at least some people listening will be included in that non-voting majority. So if you are one of those who's decided going to the polls is just not worth your effort, we'd like to hear how you reach that decision. And if you're one of the exceptions who will vote, we want to hear your thinking too. The call-in number is 888-WMRA-TALK. With us, one Republican, one Democrat, and one journalist who are all likely to say tomorrow's election could very well revamp the power structure in Virginia government. Whether you agree with that view or not, you are most welcome to join the conversation, beginning right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. America's presidential election is now exactly 1 year, 365 days away. There are, of course, many uncertainties about that coming decision day. We don't even know yet who one of the major party candidates is going to be. But one thing is absolutely predictable about that election day. Far more Virginians will go to the polls to participate in democracy on that day than will turn out for tomorrow's local and state elections, even though a case can be made that tomorrow's results could in many ways have a much more immediate and more powerful impact on the day-to-day lives of millions in the Commonwealth. So, if you are one of the minority who will go to the polls tomorrow and vote, please make note of this phone number. 888-WMRA-TALK. We'd like to hear your reasoning for why you are so exceptional. If you are one of the majority who tomorrow is not likely to vote, please make note of the same number, which translates to 888-967-2825. We'd like to hear your reasoning for why you are not going to the polls tomorrow. We are broadcasting today from the studios of the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Here with me, former member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Chris Saxman, Republican from Stanton, and current member of the House of Delegates, David Toscano, Democrat from Charlottesville. Gentlemen, welcome.
Great to be here.
How you doing?
I knew you were going to say something, Chris.
I know, I was over here.
Also with us by phone, the woman we are charging with the task of keeping us all honest, Washington Post political reporter Anita Kumar. Anita, great to be speaking with you again.
Thank you.
Well, Anita, we'll go to you first. If you would give us the basic overview, all 100 seats in the General Assembly's House of Delegates, all 40 seats in the General Assembly's State Senate up for election tomorrow. What's at stake?
Well, I know we're here with two current or former House members, but I think all eyes will be on the State Senate tomorrow. The Democrats have a 22-18 lead there, and the Republicans are aggressively trying to take back the Senate, and they have a very good shot at it. There are probably half a dozen races across the state that are too close to call going into the final day. The Republicans are all suspected to pick up some seats, maybe 5, 6, 7, in the House of Delegates, where they already have 59 Republican members and two that caucus with the Republicans, so 61 essentially.
And what difference does it make whether or not the Republicans take back control of the Virginia State Senate?
Well, it would be the second time since the Civil War that the Republicans had both the House, the Senate, and, of course, the governor's mansion. The governor, Bob McDonnell, is a Republican, and he thinks he could get many more of his policy proposals, his bills, if you will, through the General Assembly. I mean, it would be a very different, depending on who you talk to, a very different, agenda going forward. Democrats and Republicans obviously disagree on a variety of things. They agree on some, disagree on some other issues, and the governor is hopeful that he could have both of them of his party.
Are there any particular measures that have failed when the governor or Republican minority members of the Senate have tried to get legislation passed when, as it has been for the past 4 years, the Senate was controlled by Democrats, that are now, we can predict, very likely to get passed if the Republicans do, in fact, win tomorrow?
Well, there's a couple views on this. I'd be interested to hear what the others have to say about it. But the governor would tell you that he has had a hard time getting things passed, like pension reform, although I believe both the House and Senate were not really on board with his proposal, but he's going to try that again. There's a lot of K-12 things, that public school things that he wants to get through that are more about merit pay and school choice that the Democrats in the Senate would not go for. So he's talked a few, you know, about things like that. Now, if you talk to others, they would say that, particularly in the House, that the Republicans, who are, of course, in the majority, have sent a lot of bills over to the Senate that are more on social conservative issues that just don't even get heard, that don't even get heard in a committee and just kind of die. Some of them are killed, but most of them just don't get heard. Of course, the House does the same thing to the Democratic proposals that go over their way as well.
David Toscano, you are a current sitting member of the House of Delegates, although you have been in the minority as long as you have been in the House. And the Republicans now have such a solid, huge majority in the House. Nobody is talking about any possibility of that changing in this election. The only potential for change seems to be in the state Senate. But as the guy who is currently sitting in the House, can you make any predictions about what might change in terms of legislation that makes it through both chambers if the Republicans take control of the state Senate as well as the House?
Well, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic, because if the Republicans take the Senate this time around, the character of the body is going to be much different than when it was when the Republicans took the Senate back early in the beginning of the decade.
8 years ago.
Yeah. This would be a much more conservative Senate, a much more socially conservative Senate. And so if you're taking a look at the various items that might get passed, I think you will see a lot of very socially conservative bills come out of the House, go over to the Senate, and then it'll be interesting to see whether the Senate supports those bills and then whether the governor will sign them. You know, to some extent, the Republicans in the state Senate have been able to talk a lot about socially conservative legislation, but they've had not to vote on a lot of it because the Democrats have been bottling it up. But I think you're going to see the cork come out of the bottle if the Republicans take the Senate. There's going to be a lot of legislation that's very socially conservative. Then the governor will have to decide whether he wants to sign it. We're going to see how moderate Governor McDonnell really is if the Senate goes Republican.
Chris Saxman, as somebody who left the House of Delegates a few years ago but still watches politics in Virginia very closely, Republican, do you see any particular types of legislation that are much more likely to pass into law if the Republicans control both houses of the General Assembly?
Oh, sure. I don't think I have any set bills that would come out. I think you'll definitely see a move in the K-12 arena as far as charter schools, school choice, virtual schooling, and the like. Socially divisive issues, I think, which would garner more headlines, are going to be have to if let's go under the presumption that the Senate does go Republican, which is not guaranteed. I mean, I think it's going to be very close. But if it does, which is the presumption here for this discussion, you'll see more issues come to the fore. But I think the Speaker of the House, the Senate Majority Leader, and the governor are going to have to go to their respective caucuses and say, look, guys, we have an opportunity here to do some very good things, and we have this presidential election coming around here in a year. And Virginia is going to be a battleground state. We're the new Ohio. You know, we're going to be a bellwether for the election coming up regardless. Then they have to manage what they're going to be putting out there to the public for consumption legislatively, politically in the next year as well. So it's all eyes are going to be on Virginia, especially with McDonald being on the shortlist for a lot of VP speculation. So lots at stake. And if they can control themselves, contain themselves, restrain themselves, and do some good things and not get out of control. But when you put 3,000 bills in, you never know what's going to percolate up. All of a sudden, it's in committee on the docket. You're going, uh-oh, what are we going to do with this thing? And that's a problem to manage.
Well, to you, Chris, or to you, David, or to you there in Richmond, Anita, if my recollection is correct, in the last legislative session, Republican proposed measures, changes that got through the House, got stopped in the Senate, had a lot of attention on both sides, were things like proposals to expand gun rights, proposals to further restrict access to abortion, and proposals to take money out of the general fund and put it into transportation. If, in fact, as many are predicting, that the Republicans win a couple extra seats in tomorrow's election in the state Senate and take, by at least virtue of a tie with a lieutenant governor who can then break the tie, and he is a Republican, take effective control of the state Senate. Are those things likely to proceed? Further restrictions on abortion, money out of the general fund for transportation, greater freedom for gun owners?
Well, you know, if you just predict based on the bills that were passed in the House but that died in the Senate, you'd have to say that those bills are going to be back again. Now, Chris is right. It is true that maybe the governor will say, you guys, be careful here. Don't give me all this socially conservative legislation. But, you know, he's got his base as well to play to. And so he's going to have the pressure to let the social conservatives have their way. And so, you know, you take something very concrete. Let's look at the budget that came out of the House last time. It had cuts of $620 million in K-12 education. For my jurisdictions, that was $2 million a jurisdiction. That meant a number of teachers that wouldn't be employed in this next year. The state Senate stood up and said, no, we're not going to have that. We're putting the money back in. Eventually, the House caved into that, and the money was kept in the budget. In a dynamic where the state Senate is controlled by Republicans, that probably wouldn't have happened. The budget would have had stripped out of it that $620 million in K-12, and there would have been less money going to the localities. Then the localities would have had to make up their mind whether they want to put in their own money and raise taxes or take it from someplace else or let the cut stand. And I think, you know, people think about the socially conservative legislation, but there's also some very tangible budgetary issues in terms of priorities for spending that could be affected by this.
Yeah, when the caucuses get together, and one has to remember that just because there's a Republican House and Republican Senate doesn't mean they get along at all.
Anita, you're laughing. You want to explain that laughter
to
us?
They could explain better, especially Chris Saxman could explain better. But basically, historically, for years, the Republicans in the House and the Republicans in the Senate have not gotten along at all. In fact, you could argue that Democrats, you know, they've gotten along with, you know, the other party rather than themselves. I did hear, though, this year that they are working on this election very well together. So maybe that's passed.
So I'm sorry, Chris, go ahead.
Well, when you said, I mean, it's true. I mean, the House and the Senate, I mean, I think it goes back to, I forget what Speaker Rayburn said, that he was giving Lyndon Johnson a bunch of grief because Johnson got on the floor and was excoriating the Senate when he was in the House. And he called him to his office and he said, Lyndon, we don't do that here. We don't excoriate members of our own party. Yes, the Senate is, there are the same members of our party, but they're still our adversary. And you have to remember that. And that holds true. I mean, the body's separated for a reason. This House and the Senate aren't supposed to get along. They have a four-year view of things. And then you have the governor, who has a very different view of things. And the House doesn't necessarily agree with the governor because he's a member of their own party. And they're going to have their own say in the matter. So when you set up the budget, I think the budget was set up to make the Senate Democrats cave on other areas, knowing full well they weren't going to cut that K-12. So those games are going to go on ahead of time. And the way the Budget Conference Committee is set up is very, very technical, and it's going to change a lot. So the game is going to change, and I think they're going to have to manage that. And it's up to the governor. He's got a lot riding on this session. The 2012 session for the Governor McDonald is huge. And with some of his recent jobs announcements, I think he'll have a lot of wind behind his back, and I think he'll be very active in managing the House and the Senate.
Our panel today on Virginia Insight includes Richmond-based political reporter Anita Kumar of The Washington Post, former member of the House of Delegates, Republican Chris Saxman from Stanton, and current House of Delegates member, Democrat David Toscano from Charlottesville. I'm Tom Graham. We have several posts on our Virginia Insight Facebook page already, and we'll get to some of those as soon as we get back from the break. But let me note that hearing me read all of those Facebook posts gets really boring unless we can break some of it up with some of our listeners' voices on the phone line. So if you'd be willing to be one of those voices, all of the lines are open right now at 888 WMRA Talk. So you want to say it now?
If it comes up.
Yeah, we're on the air. So this is Chris Saxman, who is tweaking a little bit his famous story about Lyndon Johnson when he was in the House and the then Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn.
Lyndon Johnson, I remembered it more actually correctly. Johnson was escorting the Republicans.
In the House.
And Rayburn called him his office, said, Lyndon, we don't talk about Republicans on the House floor that way. He said, but they're the Republicans. They're the bad guys, basically. And Rayburn said, no, they're our adversary. The Senate is our enemy.
And that holds true in most legislatures across the country, where the so-called lower house, which is usually called the House,
the more numerous body,
the upper house, which is usually called the Senate, see each other as something quite
different.
Yeah, I guess that's a good way to put it.
Well, we've been around longer than the Senate, so we're more important than the House. But, you know, it is interesting. The dynamic will be different, though, because, again, the politics of the Senate, if it goes Republican, they're going to be much more conservative than they ever have been. And, you know, some of the folks who were perceived as pretty moderate, people like Senator Chichester, Fred Quayle, William Wampler, will not be in the Senate anymore because they've retired. So they're going to be replaced with folks who tend to be a little more to the right. Some of the House Republicans have chafed at the more moderate character of the Senate for a long time, and I think now they're going to see a much more conservative bent if the Republicans take over.
So on our Facebook page leading up to today's show, we did several postings about all of the predictions that there's going to be an extremely low turnout in tomorrow's elections. And most of the people who have posted so far are responding to that. We have Carolyn, who says, I'm going to vote. We have Elizabeth, who says, I absolutely must vote. My father told me once that he went to war to make sure I could vote. So how could I let him down? Anybody respond to what either Elizabeth or Carolyn have to say?
It's great. Get out and vote.
Yeah, I wish everybody felt like that.
It's November in Virginia. It's time to vote, people.
That's right. Even in a gubernatorial year, it's 50% at most. You know, it's.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of races, a lot of seats in the House aren't contested.
Right.
The ones, I think if you look at the ones that are most heavily contested, they'll have the higher turnouts because that's where the advertising's going. That's where the impetus has been to get people out to the polls, to get your volunteers out. That's where the excitement is.
And that's where you know your vote can make a difference. You know, back here in the Charlottesville area in the early 80s, Tom Mickey, who ran for state Senate, won by one vote. That's a state Senate race where, you know, there'd be 200,000 people in a district. And I don't know how many voters, but one vote. So,
well, David Descano, just to put you on the spot, since you're the Democrat here, conventional wisdom among all the political scientists I've ever talked to is that when there is a low turnout election and when there is an off year election, which is sort of what tomorrow's is, Republicans can be depended on to turn out in better proportion than Democrats. Fair?
Who says that?
I mean, Tom does.
Oh, Tom does. Okay, well.
In low turnout elections, conventional wisdom is that Republicans turn out in better proportion in their district than Democrats do. Now, if you have a district that's heavily Democratic in registration, then it doesn't matter so much. But if you have districts where it's close or you have districts where Republicans have an advantage, there's the general thinking is that Republicans are the ones who are going to turn out more in low turnout elections. And I can tell, based both on Anita's reaction and the look on your face, David, that you would take issue with that.
Well, there are all kinds of theories.
I think you're 3 for 3 in that. I don't buy it.
Yeah, but there are all kinds of theories. People are saying that the weather's supposed to be nice and that's good for Democrats. Who knows? It's a function of the candidates. It's a function of the money spent. It's a function of the organization.
And
the issues that are before the public. So I hope a lot of people come out and vote.
I think the thing you could probably count on is, especially important in Virginia with an election every year, is that the party out of power, and of course it's a divided government right now, but the one we're talking about a little bit is the Senate here, the party out of power generally is more energetic to try to get people out because they always want to get power back. So, you know, I feel like the last couple weeks, you know, we've really heard a lot about the Republicans but not because of the reason you say, Tom, only because they're out of power and they're itching to get it back, and it's just a couple seats, you know, and I feel like they have the energy.
This is one of those occasions where I really need Bob Roberts here to underscore what political theory says. But let me know. We're already getting some phone calls now. So for anybody who's just tuned in, we have with us Anita Kumar, political reporter from The Washington Post, Chris Saxman, former member of the Virginia House of Delegates, Republican from Stanton, David Toscano, current member of the House of Delegates, Democrat from Charlottesville. Amy's on the line. Amy, thank you for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for our guests, please.
Yes, I'm going out to vote tomorrow so I can vote for Connie Brennan. Matt Ferris kept sending me all these postcards in the mail, which I don't like, where he always says, I'm going to defend traditional marriage like I'm some kind of five-headed monster that's going to magically teleport into his house and break up his marriage. But I was nice about it. I called him up and I said, now I know that it cost y'all a lot of money to print out these postcards, so you don't have to send me any more. But I kept getting them. So my partner called and said, well, we don't need any more of these postcards. And the guy who answered the phone said, well, it's just some big machine that prints them out. We don't have any control over who they go to. And so she said, oh, so that's how you're going to run the government, like some big machine that doesn't have any control? So that just cemented what we thought about him already.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting...
This is David Toscano.
This is David. That is a very interesting race. 4 years ago, Connie ran against Watkins Abbott, who previously was a Democrat and has been a fixture down in that part of the state for a while. And
this is the 59th
district,
which in our listening area primarily includes Nelson County and then goes south down to Lynchburg.
Right. And she lost that race. But when Abbott retired, she decided she was going to get into this one. And it's turned out, even though redistricting made it a much more Republican district, it's turned out to be a very competitive race. Mr. Ferris is... There are all kinds of these allegations that I'm not quite sure of. I've seen these protective orders taken out against him, allegations of shooting weapons, DUI, all kinds of things in that race that have come out. Of course, Johnny is a squeaky clean member of the Board of Supervisors and a nurse. And I think it's going to be an interesting race to watch to see how it turns out. There's also a Tea Party candidate in that race that may ultimately play a role because you may take some votes away from the Republican. So it's a very interesting race to watch.
And I read all that stuff about Matt Ferris in the Nelson paper, but I'd already done made up my mind even before I saw it. So,
Amy, the independent candidate that that David was just mentioning, Linda Wall, has had some interesting publicity as well. And in this case, they're not allegations, I don't think, because she's acknowledged that many years ago she had what I guess would be called inappropriate sexual contact with some of her students, her female students, when she was a gym teacher. Have you paid attention to that kind of noise in this election, or did you just decide from the get-go that Connie Brennan was your candidate?
Well, I hadn't heard anything else about that other lady. It said in the paper that she was running, but all they said was her name, so that I hadn't heard anything else about her.
Well, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
888-967-2825 translates to 888-WMRA-TALK. If you want to join the conversation with Chris Saxman, Republican, David Toscano, Democrat, and Washington Post reporter Anita Kumar. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. I'm sorry, Chris. I was turned away looking at the computer screen when you started to speak.
I don't know much about the race. I know Connie ran a close race against Watkins last time, and it should be a very close race.
And Watkins, although he wasn't independent, voted with the Republican majority.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, he decided to start caucusing with us. He's very conservative.
When he left the Democratic Party.
Right, right. And that's been a trend in the Southwest, South Central side with Virgil Goode and folks like that.
For a long time, Democrats from that part of the state were considered conservatives.
It's a fairly divided, politically divided area. Virgil, Lacey Putney, and Watkins really have a sort of a brand out there as a conservative, independent, former Democrat.
That's right, yeah. But redistricting did make it more Republican. At the same time, it's interesting because Connie Brennan got the endorsement of both the Lynchburg paper and the Charlottesville paper, which is – pretty much unheard of, unusual. And I think part of that's because Mr. Ferris has been in such trouble in the press that people have been a little leery about embracing his candidacy.
Now, there's always a surprise in every election
cycle.
Right. This might
so we'll
be
see
it.
What happens.
Anita Kumara, I don't know if any such thing came from any of the columnists at your newspaper, but I have noticed that columnists for the Richmond Times-Dispatch and for the Washington Times have said over the past couple of weeks that it seems all but a foregone conclusion that Republicans will pick up enough seats to take control of the Virginia State Senate as of tomorrow's election. Of course, both of those columns were published close to 2 weeks ago. Are you hearing anything different now? Do you think the races gotten any closer?
Our columnist also said something similar. I guess the last couple weeks, it feels like people are talking about the Republicans sort of having the edge here. But, you know, there are so many...
And there are really five races.
Yeah, there's so many
contested races. There are two in Northern Virginia, two sort of south side, and then one right here in the WMRA region, where Ed Hauk, the Democrat, is the longtime incumbent. A lot of money poured into that race, I think, between both sides. Mr. Hauk and is it Mr. Reeves? Who's the
Bryce Reeves?
Who's the Republican businessman challenger, a total of some $2 million spent already in that race?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That media market, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most negative races there is, and that's saying a lot because there are several races that have gone negative.
And it's kind of unusual that a long-term incumbent, I think he's been in the state Senate for like
28 years.
I feel like he's had tough races every time, perhaps not this tough, but pretty tough. This time he's also being opposed by two independent or, you know, different groups, not affiliated with Bryce Reeves, his opponent, but other groups that are attacking him on his stance on abortion.
So Ed Hauk going to get another term tomorrow or going to lose to a Republican?
I think it's a total toss-up going into tomorrow. You actually didn't mention another one that is very tight, and that's in the Hampton Roads area, Senator John Miller.
Yeah, and all these races have all these little interesting nuances. There was a campaign ad in the John Miller race that imposed Phil Hamilton's face on the ad and tried to link him with John Miller. Now, Phil Hamilton, of course, was one of the most powerful members of the House of Delegates.
Republican.
And was he was a Republican, and he was convicted of, fraud or what it was, and he's got to serve a jail term. And so they imposed his face on the ad, and then the Republican Party of Virginia was taken to task for that, and they tried to take his name off the take his face off the ad. It's very, very strange. But, you know, getting back to Hauk, because a lot of your listeners around here are interested in that race, that is going to be a very close race.
So let's mention that Ed Hauk is based sort of in the Fredericksburg area. His district was recently brought further south in redistricting, so it now includes a portion of Albemarle County. It, I think, also includes in our listening area Madison and Orange counties.
It used to.
Louisa, your area too?
Louisa. But, I mean, the thing about the Hauk race is interesting is, you know, for years and years and years, he has been running in a Republican performing district. And this year with redistricting, he got a little more moderate precincts out of Albemarle, hoping
more
that
Democrats.
Yeah, hoping that might help him. But, of course, the counter to that is Bryce Reeves has gotten a lot of money from the governor. In fact,
and he's gotten money from some nationwide organizations.
Oh, well, yeah, there are nationwide organizations pouring money into Virginia because, you know, they want to try to, sully up the Democrats so that Obama has a hard time next year. But, there's a lot of money that's flown, gone into that race from the governor and other places, and they're trying to influence that race. I think Hauk is going to prevail. I think he'll squeak it out in the end. He always seems to do that.
Well, I think when you ask about predictions and where things are going to go, I think you have to pull back a little bit to maybe 20,000, 25,000 feet and say, okay, what's going on here? It's a bad year for incumbents. This is a horrible year for the economy is trending badly.
And yet there are no Republican incumbents who really look like they're in trouble in the state Senate races.
I was talking to my wife today. I think Anita's going to chime in here and probably tell you something.
Well, that's why I say such ridiculous things so often.
Talking to my wife today. I said she's politically aware but not involved at the on the ground level and watches all these races. And I said, what do you think? What's going on? And she was very astute. She said, it's all about the federal government right now. Everything is about what's going on in D.C. or what's not going on in D.C. And that translates to a bad year for Democrats, a bad year for incumbents. So this might be one of those years where an Ed Hauch does lose. John Miller was going to be a tough race anyway. Then you have some other marginal districts down the southwest, south side that could flip that otherwise are fairly conservative rural Democrats who are probably going to lose.
Anita, before you chime in, and I do want the clarification from you, I just want to let anybody who has just joined us know that they are hearing the voices of Stanton-based conservative political activist and former chair of the Virginia House of Delegates.
Did you say that? Is that out loud?
Caucus Chris Saxman, a Republican. Sitting next to him, Charlottesville-based attorney David Toscano, who currently represents the 57th District in the Virginia House of Delegates. He is a Democrat. And speaking to us by phone, Richmond-based political reporter Anita Kumar from The Washington Post. Okay, so Anita, go ahead and correct what I said that was wrong.
It's not a correction. It's just an interesting development in the last couple weeks. You are correct in that there wasn't, there's probably not a Republican incumbent up until a couple weeks ago that I would say, this is in the Senate, is in trouble. But the Democrats sort of sensing that they might need to do that or might need some help have put $200,000 and Senator Mark Warner has endorsed, obviously a Democrat, has endorsed the former Republican, now independent person challenging Senator Ralph Smith. Now, I know that's outside of our area, or your area. That's in the Roanoke area. But it's very interesting because basically they think if they can knock off a Republican senator and replace him with an independent, formerly a Republican, that's one less for the Republican, and maybe they don't give up the majority.
And they think that if they can get that independent elected, that he will vote with the Democrats?
Well, I guess he can vote any way he wants, but the point is, he could vote either way, but the point is he wouldn't be caucusing with the Republicans probably, right? I mean, he's an independent. I don't know what he would do, but he wouldn't be a Republican senator per se. I mean, they're really thrown in the last couple of weeks. They've been watching the polls and seeing what's happened, and the polls show that that's a very, very tight race. So I think the Democrats think they can make a move there.
Okay, so we've got some more posts on Facebook for me to read again. It would be wonderful to interspice between those people's voices, and we have all of our phone lines open if you have any thoughts about tomorrow's election at 888-967-2825. That's 888-WMRA-TALK. If you're going to vote tomorrow, we'd like to know why you've decided to be the exception, since so many people in the majority are expected to not vote. If you're going to not vote tomorrow, we'd like to hear your reasoning for that as well. 888-967-2825. David Toscano, I cut you off that time instead of Chris, so we'll get you to be first up when we get back from the break. This is Virginia Insight. Talk about Virginia. Voting tomorrow is our focus, at least a part of Virginia voting tomorrow. We'll be back in just a bit more than 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Chris Saxman, a Republican, used to represent the 20th House of Delegates District, which included the city of Stanton. And what else? Do you remember?
Highland County.
Do you remember? Part of
Augusta. I can remember every precinct, every turnout.
I remember every voter.
David Toscano is an attorney in Charlottesville, a Democrat. He represents the 57th House of Delegates District in Virginia's General Assembly. That includes the city of Charlottesville and portions of Albemarle County. Anita Kumar reports on the General Assembly and all manner of other Virginia political issues for The Washington Post. You're up, David.
No, I think we were talking about Brandon Bell being the most powerful man in the Senate if he wins, because it could be that there's a 2020 split, and he's figuring out who to caucus with, and he'll be the what Chris just called a few minutes ago the kingmaker.
Oh, yeah. So he'll be Senate Finance Chairman.
It'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Okay, so here's...
But the modeling, though, of those polling, I mean, we were talking about offline here. I think it's real important that even though Brandon's a former Republican running against a guy he just lost to 4 years ago, Ralph Smith, in the primary, you know, those polls might show something that the turnout won't. I mean, you still have to get Democrats to show up to the polls to vote for a guy they voted against for the last 12 years. That's tough.
Here's Amanda on Facebook who says, I'm hoping the turnout is a lot better than predicted. How can people complain about the status quo and then not vote? Now, Anita, I hope, is going to correct me on this because she's really good at keeping track of what's true versus what I think is true. But from what I've seen and from the political analysts I've talked to, there is a prediction of the highest of the turnout tomorrow being 30% of eligible voters, the lowest being something below 20%. Are you hearing something different, Anita?
No, that's about what I'm hearing. I think, not sure exactly, but I think 07.
So that's really going to disappoint Amanda and people who have her viewpoint. Why such low turnout?
Not as many races. I mean, the fact of the matter is, how many races in the House are contested, David? 20?
Boy, they're not many. And the ones that are contested, you know, how many are effectively contested? The way redistricting was drawn, you know, the Republicans drew all these districts that were 60 of the seats are now 60% plus Republican performing. And so that's a very difficult race to run in if you're in those districts. And, yeah, I mean, the other thing is that people don't really understand a lot of what their state government does. They don't understand that really most of the transportation issues get resolved in the state, almost all the education issues, the whole issues related to Medicaid, you know, public safety. These are really key issues, and people think everything happens at the federal government level. It's not happened. That doesn't happen that way. It's all at the state, so state government is really important.
And for the most part, as I think David can agree to, maybe, I don't know if he can or not, Virginia's fairly well run as a state government. Looking at the other states, we're the number one in
AAA bond rating.
AAA bond rating, we're the best managed state, best place to do business, best place to raise kids. We got a lot of good things going on.
So people are not upset about anything? So no, they're not turn
sure. I mean, if they're upset, they're going to storm the Bastille, right? They're not upset.
I was wondering if
you
made the point you just made because you're saying people are satisfied with the state's
If you're going to run, I mean, did David point out the redistricting reality? If you want to get down to it, I mean, Democrats are in a down year. Obama's not as popular as he was 4 years ago, 3 years ago. You know, the wind's out of that sail a little bit, so people aren't going to jump up and say, "Yeah, I'll run." You know, it's difficult to find candidates to run for a job that pays $17,000 a year to go spend 3 months away, effectively, from your family and your business, and to have what little impact you're going to have on a state that's fairly well run. So there's a lot of dynamics in finding candidates, good candidates, who will want to run and spend time in the legislature.
888-WMRA Talk, our phone number. Bill in Shenandoah County, thanks for using that number and calling in your question or comment, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for having this discussion. I got a two-part question. Part one is, if the Senate does flip, is there any kind of this union-busting legislation that we've seen in Wisconsin and Ohio in the wings? And part two is, how much out-of-state money is flowing into this race? And I'll listen for your responses off-air. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Bill.
Well, last year
there
was an effort to enshrine the right-to-work law into the Virginia Constitution. And my guess is you'll see that legislation again. You know, for a constitutional amendment to pass, it's got to pass two consecutive sessions and then go to the voters. It may not happen this year, but it might happen next year because you have to have an intervening election. But, you know, it's hard to predict because any delegate or any senator can put in any bill. And I think the Governor McDonnell is probably sharp enough not to polarize the electorate by trying to take the position the Wisconsin governor took. But you never know. And well, I think that was pushed by the governor.
Well, true. But the difference is Wisconsin and Virginia in how they have public unions. Virginia does not have public unions. So,
but you're one of the people who wants to go further than our current situation in terms of keeping this a right-to-work state. Instead of just having it be a law on the books, you have pushed in the past for it to become a constitutional amendment.
Absolutely. It was my bill. But that won't affect public employees like Wisconsin, Ohio, and
Indiana. In terms of bills question, he apparently is somebody who favors unions.
Sure.
About taking action that would further limit the likelihood of unions being successful anywhere in Virginia.
But the fight's not there because the reality's not there. It's a different reality in Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin is not a right-to-work state, unlike Virginia. But I do think you'll probably...
But Chris's bill would make Virginia even... more of a right-to-work statute.
It would put it in the Constitution, but nobody's really challenged the right-to-work statute since it's been on the books.
They put bills in, and this is one of the reasons why I put it in there. They always say, you know, some of my former colleagues would say, oh, I'm pro-business, and then they go to their labor friends and say, oh, I'm pro-labor, and then they put in pro-labor bills knowing that the House would kill it in subcommittee, would never see the light of day, so they wouldn't have to vote up to themselves. I said, oh, yeah, let's put this on the ballot. Let's see how strong you really are. It's time to decide whose side you're on.
And so in terms of Bill's question, if the Senate is taken control of Republicans, does your proposed amendment, which is still active in the legislature, stand a better chance of getting through both houses?
Oh, yeah, it stands a better chance, but what he was asking is not going to happen in Virginia because the reality is not in Virginia. It was Wisconsin about public unions, public employee unions, which we don't have in Virginia.
It's so much fun to talk to you about this, but now all of a sudden we're getting lots of
calls. To a second part of his question, I have no idea how much out-of-state money is. You can go to www.vpap.org and find out for yourself.
Well, the Republican Party nationally has been pouring money in here big time, and the Democrats tried to respond, but they have no way of responding quite as effectively. The other thing that happened, you know, in the House race down in the Ward Armstrong's race, at least 10 Republican delegates anteed up $10,000 apiece to try to get rid of the minority leader of the House.
By the way, David's a Democrat, Chris is a Republican, and in case you couldn't tell, I don't know whether Kimberly
was the next minority leader,
a political affiliation, but she did post this on our Facebook page, quote, I always vote, even if the pickings are slim. It is something I deeply believe in. I have been in the service and have seen places where people do not get a chance to vote in fair elections. It makes me deeply grateful to live in a society that we do, warts, bumps and all. I am also delighted we do not all agree we would have a Stepford wife society if we did. Kimberly, thank you for that.
Not touching that one with it.
The point is, however, that as much as 80% of the electorate is expected to not go to the polls tomorrow, and if you're part of that majority and you'd like to tell us why you don't think it's worth the effort to go to vote tomorrow, we're happy to hear your perspective, too, at 888-967-2825. But please get your call in soon. We're running out of time for calls. Tom in Stanton. Tom, are you in Stanton?
No, here in Harrisonburg.
In Harrisonburg, I'm sorry. Well, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Well, I guess it's the confessional thing is that I'm so cynical about the political space to begin with that it's ironic that I get out of bed before the sun is up and place my vote, and I do it in part because typically I don't have candidates that I'm thrilled about and vote for, but I at least want my statistical record to be known that there are folks out here that, despite our political demographics that cancel each other out or just trounce candidates from seeing office, that statistically there's a record that I have been present, that I'm voting, and that I'm trying to make my values known. I guess I'm calling for some political therapy. I know that's not the nature of this talk show, but we're between poles of apathy and anger. You talk about finding candidates.
Well, it just so happens that we have. We're going to run out of time soon, but since you mentioned it, we have a man here who has a PhD in sociology, as well as the fact that he is a counselor at law. David, we got 30 seconds worth of counseling.
Yeah, I don't pretend to be any kind of I don't pretend to be any kind of therapist, but you know, I do hear what you're saying, and it really is troubling because so many people feel that they don't have a say. Now, I think if you get down to the local level, you can have a say more readily than at the state or the federal level. I would encourage you to start there because that's where your voice can really be heard. And as you develop a feeling that you've got some capacity to change the city or the jurisdiction in which you live, you may find empowerment in trying to work with other people who are trying to change the state in which you live. It's a process. Sometimes I feel a little despondent myself, but you know, I keep coming back because we can't cede control of things to some folks who may not act in our interests. So I would encourage you to stay involved, and I hope you can find somebody who can really give you some.
Why don't you run? Why don't you get the guy to run for office?
Come on, I mean, call me up. I'm glad to help you.
I mean, this is the part of local. I think there's a civic duty not just to participate, you know, watch the news, listen to the news, read the news, go out and vote reluctantly, cynically, jadedly. But, you know, sometimes you got to put it to yourself and say, I'm going to make the change. I mean, I did it for 8 years. I enjoyed it, made some changes, did what I thought was the right thing to do, made some friends like David here, and we did some good things together. But, you know, at the end of the day, we disagreed on a lot of things, important things. But, you know, we never let it get in the way of our relationship to further erode the governance of the Commonwealth.
And that's, Tom, do either of our study counselors offer help that you can take away?
Well, I get the sociological take, and I get the idea that politics aside, we're all still in it together. And see, that's the thing I'm not hearing. All I'm hearing is partisan politics. I'm not hearing the primary nature that we fundamentally are in this together. I grew up in the Midwest. We had a state. We didn't have a Commonwealth. So the semantics of Commonwealth would probably do well to understand. But let's start with just the idea, Commonwealth. The welfare of all across economic strata. I'm not hearing I care about myself enough that I care about my neighbor stuff in partisan politics. And I guess, you know, I probably should enroll in therapy. I will enroll in my election precinct tomorrow. I do have school board candidates that I'm happy to really have fundamental information and knowledge of affecting change there, not as a Contract for America 94 agenda, change it from the schools out. But, yeah, I can start here. And I do hear, you know, politics and
Tom, I'm sorry to cut you short because you are so eloquent and I'm really enjoying listening to you. But we have one other caller who's been waiting for the longest time from Stanton. So we're going to try and give him a few moments before we run out of time. We're going now to
Tom, don't give up.
David in Stanton, you're on Virginia Insight.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, yes, I plan to vote. I know that my vote will be in a vast minority, but I want to see it recorded anyway. And the reason I'm going to make such an effort is that I've never been, in my 63 years of life, I've really never been more disgusted in any political situation than I am in this Republican Party that's become the party of no, the party of opposition, the party of stand in the way of any kind of reasonable discourse that has only one agenda, and that's to defeat President Obama.
And thank you for that perspective. We're running short on time, so I want to give the Republican in the room a chance to respond.
Well, Tom certainly has his feelings on the issue, and I'm sure they haven't changed.
This is David.
Oh, David. I'm sorry, David.
From Stanton.
That's David over there. You're Tom. He's David. We just had Tom. Now we got another David. No, I don't think David's new to the Democratic Party. You know, he's upset because it's a very politically charged time in America. You know, it's everywhere you go, 24/7, 365. Politics is nonstop, and it's exhausting. He might be upset with the Republican Party, but, you know, that's his prerogative. I'm sure he's never going to give him a fair shake. You know, they've passed 20 bills out of the House. Are they job-creating bills? No. Are they going to disagree with the President Obama? Yeah, that's what they're supposed to do. There's this democratically controlled Senate. You know, they're going to do what they're supposed to do. I mean, that's the political world we're in right now. In the end, this falls on the president. And if he wants to rally the troops and bring Harry Reid and John Boehner together and say, look, put it all aside and not worry about the election, I'll be the first one to say I'm dumbfounded.
David Toscano, you've got 30 seconds to try to sum up anything you want to sum up,
sure,
including perhaps persuading people to get to the polls.
Well, when I was listening to our friend who needed the so-called therapy, I was reminded of Jefferson's words And those words were life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And for Jefferson, the pursuit of happiness was a concept that involved everybody in the community involved together to make a better society. And I think that's part of what voting is about. And I hope that people will take Jefferson's words to heart and show up tomorrow and perhaps make a difference in their community and in the state.
Anita Kumar, your final 30 seconds, and please feel free to include any predictions about how it's going to turn out tomorrow.
I don't do predictions. I don't know. I guess the Republicans might have a little bit of an edge, but I really think there's so many that are just too close to call. But I would also encourage people to vote because I think that's important. It's, you can't, you know, complain about the outcome if you don't go to the polls and vote.
Our guests have been Washington Post political reporter Anita Kumar, Republican political activist Chris Saxman, and Democratic member of the Virginia House of Delegates, David Toscano. Thank you all so much for making time for us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure to be with you. Anita, have a great day tomorrow. Write great copy.
Thanks.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers are Bob Levicky and Terry Ward. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Tony Field, Elliot Majerzik, and Andrew Windham at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. And of course, if you like us on Facebook, you'll have access to a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight, and hope you do take the time to vote.